Good morning. Welcome here to day three of the event. It's early morning, the morning after the party. This is probably the most critical time of the conference, right? How many of you are still hungover from yesterday evening? Right, just me. Fantastic. How many of you went to the party yesterday evening? Okay, I hope you guys had fun. How many of you wake up with lions? Any other animal in the room? Strange stuff happening? Any story you want to share? Well, let's do it later. My name is Giorgio Sardo. I'm a senior technical evangelist, Microsoft Corporation. I've been working in the last years on HTML5, working with developer communities, with partners, and very closely with the Internet Explorer team. Today, we're going to talk about the future of HTML5. I think in the previous session here at Mix, you got a message very loud and clear. The future of the web is HTML5. HTML5 evolved a lot in the last years. It evolved very quickly. Things that previously were able only using plugins today are accessible using HTML5 and in general web standards. And so it's important at this point to understand why is this happening and what's going to happen next. At the same time, I think it's safe to recognize the fact that browsers evolved in the last years. There's been a lot of competition in the browser space. IE got better, Chrome got better, Firefox got better, and I think all of the browsers today have a fast JavaScript engine. They maybe redesigned the rendering pipeline. The Internet Explorer team went even further with IE9, and they got really access to the hardware, and so they enabled the hardware acceleration everywhere. But still, this gives you a new platform to build your applications. Now, my goal for today is to take a step back from the technology for just a few minutes and talk about HTML5. Like, what's the rationale behind HTML5? And then we're going to talk about the Microsoft approach to HTML5, and I will try to be as more transparent as I can to tell you and explain you how we internally look at HTML5, how we work with it. Then we're going to look at some internal work in progress. I'm going to show you things that might be surprises for you. Maybe you haven't seen them before. Actually, we never showed them before, so they will be surprises. And you might have an hint just looking at my laptop there. And lastly, we're going to close about talking about HTML be next, HTML6 or whatever is be next. So because it's early morning, because I know that some of you, and me included, still need to wake up, I want to start with some demo. So I will start with one very, very interesting game. It's called Agent 8 Ball. Obviously, this is built in HTML5, in particular the canvas. And it's a very nice game. It allows you to play cool, right? And you can see like the kind of like details in the animation, in the shadows, in the performance, right? The performance is absolutely smooth. This is live. You can go play anytime, possibly not during my presentation, but please go and try it. The next one is the one from Bon Jovi that you see in the keynotes a couple of days ago. So Bon Jovi has this huge number of videos, right? He's been there for a few years, and he recorded a lot of video footage from his live concerts. And so the idea is here is that you become the director of his video music clip. So you can create your own music clip starting from Bon Jovi's videos. So the inner circle is your timeline. The outer circle are the different camera angles. And what you can do here is, for example, you can drag and drop Bon Jovi here, and then I move to the 30 seconds, and I will zoom on the keyboard solo. And then after 1 minute, instead, I want to switch on a different camera, and I will use the drummer camera. And I keep going on here with the rest of the timeline. Once you build your by the way, you can start previewing here at any time, right? Once you created your own music clip, video clip here, you can add effects on top of it. So you can say, I want to add this like old overlay, I want to make it this animation kind of like a gearish effect. I want to add like more colors here. And then as you hit publish, this information get cranked together, and what you will get is a HD video of the Bon Jovi concert, and this is exactly the same video clip that you built. So this is going to have all of your effects, all of your camera's angles. This is going to be customized for you. Alright, you get the idea. I swear, working on this project was so fun, and I wanted to be on stage with Bon Jovi, so this is the first time for me. Then another project we've been working with BBC in UK is Top Gear. For those of you that don't know, Top Gear is like a television show that talks about car, and it's quite different from like any other show that talks about cars. And what BBC decided to do was basically to be like the cool one.
A special moment is upon us because, well, you might have thought it had gone away, but I don't know, because we are going to do the cool wall! Yeah.
So they rebuilt the cool wall using HTML5. And so this time, for example, I can look at the cool wall. This is like the official version from the Top Gear series. And I can zoom on a car. So I can zoom on a Lamborghini, and then you have a deep zoom effect. And all of this is just HTML5. You see, if I right click, there is no plugins. Obviously, you can get videos, and you can customize these, and you have drag and drop. Let's see if some nice car. I like this. Anyone has this car? I don't, but still, it's cool. The other, another application that has been developed by a partner in France is called Stu Design. It's like Never Mind the Bullets, and this is like a story that where you are walking through this parallax effect, see? And as I move the mouse around the screen, you're basically unveiling new elements. And the story you basically get the story at this point, right? And as I arrive at the room, I can go inside the room and I have a transition. And if we look at this from a technology point of view, there is Canvas, there is SVG, there is WOF for the fonts, there is, for example, CSS3 transform on this animation from one chapter to the other. You can see that the end result is actually quite impressive, right? And it's kind of funny, like there are a lot of chapters, so you can jump to lots of chapters in the story. The last demo I want to show you is coming from a colleague, Michael, in Australia. And this is a funny way to discover music. So as I hit start mission, play. I will have different songs coming out, and I need to guess which one it is. You can help me. No? Oh. Ooh. Guys, you can help me. Come on. What is this? No? Good. No. 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 Please, close. Great. I don't know who that was. All right, you have an idea of the scenarios and the potential of HTML5, right? It's pretty powerful today. In this session, I think I also want to answer some of the common questions that we receive today about HTML5. First of all, what it is? Where is it going? How is Microsoft working on HTML5? Does my browser support Future X? And if it doesn't, why? And I'm going to start by saying who is working on HTML5. So HTML5 is not something that came here like this year. It's an effort. It's a journey that is lasting for many years. And the main organizations, the communities that are working on it are probably those three. W3C is a consortium. Is ECMAScript that is working on JavaScript. And then IETF that is another consortium working on the protocols. All of this group together have been shaping what we use today on the web. And obviously, Microsoft and all of the other big browsers that you have out there are part of these consortiums. And that's where all of the conversation happen. When we look in particular inside, when we drill down into one of these consortiums, for example, the W3C, it's divided into different working groups. Each working group is working on a specific set of technology. So you will have, for example, a working group for HTML, one working group for CSS, one for SVG. In the same way in IETF, like you have one working group for the high BI. We will talk about this later. And you have also like the ECMAScript group, obviously. And there are many, right? This is not a full list of working groups. All of these working groups together, they produce more than 100 specifications. And so when today we say do you support HTML5? Actually, we are referring to more than 100 specs. It's not just one. This is really, really important to understand. Now, let's drill down into one of those working groups. In particular, I choose the HTML working group in W3C. This is the working group that is working on the HTML5, the proper HTML5 specification. The chairs of the working groups are Sam Ruby, Paul Catton, and Maciej Stakuvac. I apologize for the pronounce. So you can see that Microsoft is working there. And we've been working and leading the HTML working group for many years. And it's not just like at the chair level. We also have a lot of people from the Internet Explorer team and from other teams in Microsoft that are discussing daily, having daily conversation in the working group. It's a very active place. If you subscribe to one of the mailing lists, because all of the conversations are public, so you can go and take a look and see how Microsoft is working with Google or Mozilla or others on the standards, you will see that there is a huge number of emails being sent every day. The important thing here is that this is an open conversation. It's not driven only by Microsoft. It's a conversation where everyone is invited. And actually, we get a lot of feedbacks, and we get a lot of people from different angles, browsers, author-writing tools, accessibility tools, television, hardware, OEMs. So there is a lot of people working in these working groups. Now, the next question is HTML5 ready? Right? This working group has been working on HTML5 for many years now. So what's the current status of the specification? What does it mean, ready? Officially, the way W3C classified the specification is these five statuses. The first time the specification gets published, that's a first published working draft. And then the next iteration, it becomes a working draft. And this is where the specification grows, and everybody can provide feedbacks, and things got changed, and you can change names, you can add feature, you can remove stuff, you can split, you can merge. Once it gets to feature complete, this is how we call it in Microsoft, it's what W3C call last call. So last call means, hey guys, I think we are done. I think the specification is ready. It was ready to become a standard. So it's a last call to you to give me your last feedbacks. And the next step is we become a candidate recommendation and then a recommendation. Once it gets to recommendation, obviously it's locked. That's the recommendation. Now, what about HTML5? Well, I went a bit further. What about the 100 specification that I mentioned earlier? So what you see in this slide is the same color base that you see earlier of the five statuses. You see the 100 specifications, and by the way, these are not all of the specifications. I tried to capture most of them. Things, for example, geolock is not there, but it still like, gives you a good idea of the bigger picture. And you can see that some of the specifications have been just submitted, so there's early specification. Others are still like being worked on, and others instead are more mature, so are ready to be implemented in a safe way. The HTML5 specification is the very first column on the left, that little column on the left, that's the HTML5 specification. All of the others are CSS, SVG, and JavaScript, and web apps. Web apps is like the APIs that you can access from JavaScript. In particular, about the HTML5 specification, Microsoft believes that it's ready to go to last call in May 2011. There's been a lot of progress in the last year on the HTML5 spec. We provide a lot of feedbacks, a lot of adjustments have been made to the specification, and we think it's actually quite ready. And so we're working with the rest of the W3C to move the specification further. We want you to start using it as soon as possible, and we think it's in a very, very good shape. This is actually the agenda. We will need to see what happens in the coming weeks. Maybe everyone will agree that the specification is ready. In this case, it will go to last call. If somebody will not agree, then Microsoft is committed to work with those people and make sure that we find like a good answer to all of the pending questions or issues. So this is the story in W3C. Now, because we're talking about more than 100 specifications, it's normal that every browser or every implementer in general will have a different strategy in adopting those specifications. I'm not going to talk about other browser strategy today. I want to focus on our approach. I want to focus on how Microsoft see those specifications and how you can rely on these specifications if you're using our platform. So first of all, there are four channels. The first channel is what we call site-ready HTML5, and this is what we put into it, IE9. Then we have another channel for developers, for people like you, to enable you to have a visibility over what's going on inside the Internet Explorer development. Then we have another channel, which is very, very new. It's called HTML5 Labs, which basically give you exposure of our prototypes. And lastly, we have a lot of work done with the interoperability on testing. So let's start with the first channel, IE9. How many of you tried already download or try or use IE9? Oh, great. It's great to see almost all of you. So I will not spend many words on IE9. My only suggestion here is if you're looking for a place that has a list of all of the new web standards included and supported in IE9, I suggest you to go to the IE test drive. And then on top of the page, there is that little link called Developer Guide. That's a beautiful link on it goes to the MSDN that has a long list of all of the new features in IE9. So it's a good place to start if you want to learn more. We also work with developers. And so 1 year ago, we promised that we would ship a new build every 8 weeks. We call them platform previews. And actually, we did better than that. We've been even faster than the 8 weeks cycle. And you can see that every 8 weeks, we iterated with a new platform preview. And each platform preview included new features. Now, it's exciting that at Mix, a couple of days ago, we just released yet another platform preview. It's the IE10 platform preview 1. And these are the three new features that we included in this platform preview. We have support for CSS layout. Layout on the web has been actually more complex than what it should have been for many years, right? You had tables, then you had divs, and you know it's not easy to work with divs. And so what we did was submitting to the W3C a new specification. We call it Grid. It's the CSS3 Grid. And it allows you to build the layout using grids, which is like an obvious concept, but for some reason, no one ever done it in the past. And so we are the first browser to implement this, and I was talking with my colleagues in Mozilla and Opera yesterday, and I think this is actually interesting, and I expect other browsers will look at this, and we will start the conversation from now. We also support Flexbox, which is another specification on CSS3, which allows you to do the design in a flex mode. We support multi-columns, so you can realign your content into different columns. And we support ECMAScript strict mode. And strict mode was the last feature that we didn't include in IE9. And with strict mode, we have 100% support for ECMAScript 5, which is the new JavaScript. So now you have all of the new JavaScript APIs in IE9. As I said, we also work a lot on interoperability. And I know that, personally, I think the interoperability word is a bit heavy. It's a bit boring. Like, it's not that interesting thing that pop-ups and, yeah, well, let's talk about interoperability. But I translate this into you, developers, building once and having your website to work everywhere. It doesn't need to look exactly the same everywhere, but it needs to work everywhere. And in order to be there, we need to do some work. We want to simplify your life. And so Microsoft, in the last 2-3 years, have been working a lot on submitting test cases to W3C. And the goal of the test case is to say, OK, we implemented feature A. Let's build 100 test cases for feature A that try to explore all of the possible scenarios. And let's use those test cases across all of the browsers. And so if we identify that all of the browsers are working the same, then it's safe to say you can use the future in an interoperable way, and everybody will be happy. Now, the W3C understand that interoperability is a huge task, and it's very important for the success of the specification. And this is why we are inviting everyone, browsers, implementers, authority and tools, developers, to write test cases. You can contribute. If you are building an application and you see that there is a pattern, there is something that doesn't work the same across browsers, guess what? You can write a test case. It's just like a little page that with a repo scenario. You can either submit it to us or to W3C or work with other peers. Get this into the official suite of W3C, and that will become an official test case that all of the browsers will need to go and look at. So you have this capability. And please, we invite you to help us, help W3C building more test cases. The fourth channel, and this is actually the new cool stuff, is called HTML5 Labs. And HTML5 Labs has one specific goal, to experiment, to prototype features, those especially in the working draft or first published working draft stage that are not quite ready yet to be included into the mainstream browser, that need more time to settle down, but at the same time give you visibility over those and start getting feedbacks, and then get this feedback back to W3C and influence the specification based on your feedbacks and your scenario. And this is what I'd like to focus for the rest of this presentation. I'm going to start with the WebSockets. How many of you already know what WebSockets are? Okay, quite a few. WebSockets are a new new standard that basically enable you to have full duplex, bidirectional communication into the browser. And it's not just in the browser, right? Because then the browser can talk with a phone or can talk with an application, can talk with a web service. The protocol is the same. The WebSocket specification is split in two parts. The APIs are in W3C, are defined by the W3C working group on WebSocket, web apps, sorry. And then there is the protocol, which is defined by the HiBeHi, which is a working group of IETF. When we look at the evolution of WebSockets over time, you can see that there have been many iterations of the specification of W3C. There have been a lot of iteration of the protocol in IETF. You can see here the protocol being updated every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks. And as we look at the other browsers, what we find out was the other browsers implemented WebSockets actually a long time ago. And then because the WebSocket spec wasn't ready yet, their implementation eventually broke at some point, or at least the website that were taking the dependency on the first implementation, they broke. And so the browsers keep getting new updates and auto-refreshing, but the reality is that still, like, you need to, you're building something on top of a very fragile infrastructure. And as a matter of fact, Firefox and Opera recently disabled the WebSockets from their browser. Talking with, again, with my colleagues, I think they will re-enable them soon, especially because the WebSocket specification is finally coming to a convergence. It's not ready yet. And as you can see, we submitted 3 iterations of the WebSocket, I think in the last 8-10 weeks. And every drop of the HTML5 lab is actually not compatible with the previous one, because every time the protocol is changing. So now you can see why we do this as an HTML5 lab and not as a IE future. Because if you take let's say that you start building an application using HTML5 lab 1, then the specification change, we publish a new HTML5 lab, well, your website probably will need to be adjusted, modified, fixed. And we don't want this. It's not good to go in production with code that change every week, right? We want HTML5 to work. We want you to give something that is predictable and is sustainable and it's interoperable. So let's have a look to a demo of WebSocket. What I have here are two projects. I have a client and I have a server. Let's start from the server. My server, I'm using this new class called WebSocket Host, and I'm passing to the WebSocket Host my service that will handle the message, and we will see this in a minute. And then notice that I'm adding an endpoint for the WebSocket. And in particular, I'm using the WebSocket handler, and then this is obviously my local host. The reason I'm using this API, this is actually a restriction of the HTML5 lab, of this plugin that enabled this experience. Once the WebSocket will be in production, will go live in production, you can go to any port and you can use any protocol. The service is very easy. So it's inheriting from my WebSocket service. I have an override on a message, and as soon as I receive a message from the clients, I'm going to call my artificial intelligence. It's a very, very complex class. And I basically answer the question that is getting from the client, and I send back my message. Now, let's have a look to the client instead. On the client side, you can see that my page is easy. I have just an input box, and I have a send button and a label for the messages. And then the first thing I need to do is to open my socket. And so the way I open the socket is saying, if the WebSocket is implemented natively, then I will use that implementation. Otherwise, I'm going to use the WebSocket draft. WebSocket draft is basically just a proxy to our plugin, the HTML5 lab WebSocket. And the reason we created something different is, again, this is not ready for production yet, so we are experimenting, and we want to make very clear that this distinction. On the WebSocket, you can attach to the event open, and once the WebSocket is open, then you can say to the user, okay, now it's a good time to start working on this. And the way you send message is just like WebSocket send, and then you can send any message there. And on the receive instead, when I get a message from the server, I'm just going to get the data from my event, and I'm going to write the data on my client. So let's have a look at this. Let's run this demo. I'm going to start my server, and I'm in listening mode. Then I start my demo here. Do. And WebSocket is not recognized. So let's have a look to see if we find out what's going on here. Any hint is appreciated. So it tells me WebSocket draft is undefined. And it points me to this line of code. WebSocket draft. Sorry? There is a small W. This one? No, this is actually correct. Okay, let's keep this demo for now. I don't want to... Things happen, so this is why we didn't implement it in I9. It's not ready yet. No, I'm joking. There is something going on in my machine. Hopefully, eventually we will come back to this later. All of the WebSocket demos and prototypes are available on the HTML5 labs. And so if you go to the HTML5 labs, you can see that this is the website where htmlfilelabs.com. This is where we are publishing all of these new labs about HTML5. The first one has been WebSockets. And as you drill down into WebSocket, you can see that we give you documentation. You can download all of the samples, code sample, the plugins, and everything that makes this possible. And you have here a few interesting demos. Let's try to run one of these, for example. So I'm going to open two instances of the browser. This is a nice demo built by the interoperability team in DPE Microsoft. So I'm going to fight Giorgio against, I'm going to play with Giorgio against Sleepy Giorgio. Right. And so you see that I have the same application open on two instances. You can imagine those as being two users on two different parts of the world. And as I move, as one user is interacting with the page on one side, his action is actually replicated on the other, right? And the idea here is to build a puzzle and keep going like this. And here at the bottom, you can see that all of the coordinates of the mouse move are sent between the two clients. And you can see that the performance is actually quite fast. Normally, you should have used polling to send messages back to the server. With WebSocket, you just open one socket communication, and then your client can talk through the server, and the latency is almost zero. Now, because I'm not good at this game, and I want to play fast, I have a secret code, and I'm going to win. And I won, actually. Yeah, I won. All right, so again, the code of this demo is available if you go to the HTML5labs.com website. The next specification is about database. Database has obviously always been a server-side thing where you have huge database and you have large amount of data. Now that the application are moving to the client and you have more logic, more kind of logic interaction happening on the client, sometimes it makes sense to start getting more data on the client. Caching a bit of data on the client and work on the client instead of going back and forth between client and server every time. And the way you can do this today was using cookies. Then in IE8 and IE9, we support local storage. So eventually you have a hash table with like 5 megabytes restriction, and you can have like a fast access to this hash table. But if you want to index data, if you want to do fast queries, then you really need a database infrastructure. And so with a little bit of story about database. The first specification in W3C to cover database was called WebSQL Database. It's been submitted, I think, by Opera 1 or 2 years ago. And it's been adopted by Opera and Chrome and other platforms. Then what happened is that the W3C started talking about database, and actually there was some disagreement about the specification, in particular because it was relying on SQL. And for you web developers that know JavaScript, know HTML, you shouldn't learn yet another language in order to use the database in your applications. And so at that point, Mozilla and Microsoft submitted a new proposal to W3C called IndexedDB. And IndexedDB is basically allow you to have the same capabilities, so you have the same database capabilities. But this time, you're not relying on SQL. You rely on an abstracted layer. And so you just use JavaScript API to interact with the database. Let's have a look to a demo about the database. So you see that in this page, I have nothing in the HTML. This is a very slim, very simple page. And then I have a bunch of JavaScript. The first line here, and this applies in general to all of the HTML labs, is actually calling my library called IndexedDB lab. And this is just a shim. So this shim is basically connecting to the HTML5 lab. When you install an HTML5 lab, this could either be built on top of Sybarite, or it could be a new ActiveX control, right? We're adding a capability to the browser. And this shim basically is a mapping between what the API will look like in W3C and this control, this plugin that is added to the browser. The day these standards will be adopted in Internet Explorer as well as the other browsers, what you can do is just get rid of that shim, and then all of the code will keep working because all of the code that you write in this page is already using the syntax of coming from the specification. So let's go through... let's run this demo for a second, and you will see that it's actually fairly simple. So I'm just saying what I'm thinking right now, and I'm listing this I'm creating a lot of data records. And actually, I'm storing this into a database. So let's see what's going on behind the scenes. First off, I'm opening a database. And the way you do it is using the indexdb.open. You see here that there is that sync keyword. The specification right now is still debating, is actually supporting two different methods to access the database. One is synchronous, and the other one is asynchronous. For the sake of this demo, because it's simpler to visualize, I'm going to use the synchronous mode. Keep in mind that probably the most useful for you as developers will be the asynchronous. Then once I open the database, I actually can get a table. And the tables in the IndexedDB specification are called object store. And so you have here that I have my database, and I can get open object store. And I pass the name of my table. The mode here means read-only or write-only, or read-write. So you can specify what type of access you want to do to the specific store. If the table doesn't exist, you need to create it. And the way you create it is by setting the version. Again, this is something that is going to change over time. So it's important to say, I want to create something for version 2 in such a way that when there will be a new version, eventually all of these versions will work in parallel. And so I set a version, and then I create my object store. Then the next step is to add data. And adding data is easy as getting your object store and just calling the add method. And then you see that I'm adding actually like a JavaScript prototype here. To get the record, you basically can get a cursor. So you get the store, you open the cursor on the store, and then you just move, you just loop through the data, through the table, and you loop through each single line. And the cursor will go straight to your JavaScript function. For example, here I had name and cognome, and I can get my name and cognome here as well. And the result is actually pretty straightforward. Now, on the HTML5 lab site, there is a more complete example that gives you a good preview of all of the capabilities of the database. And so you can go here and you can preview all of the different capabilities. And clicking on each link will give you on the right like exactly the code that you should use in your application to start using databases. Okay, so we talk about WebSQL and IndexedDB. The next one is called File API. This is probably the first time we talk about File API. This is a very, very recent specification in W3C. There have been very few iterations so far on this specification. But the idea is simple. Today, if you want to upload a file to the server, or if you want to use a file from the browser, what you do is you have your input, you get the dialog box, you get a file, and then what happens? Well, that file gets sent to the server, and the client actually have no access over that file, right? Then you send it back to the server, and the server will send it back to you. The file API is actually an API that allows you to work with the files on the client. So from your browser, you can access the local disk, you can get files, and you can start working on these files without doing the round trip back to the server. And this specification defines a few different features. You can get a list of files. You can work with a blob, so you can serialize the file. And you can also have a file reader that goes through the file. It can be text or it can be other formats. And lastly, you can use these files as content, dynamic content for your page. Again, this is a very early specification, and Microsoft submitted many feedbacks. We believe that the spec is obviously promising, but we need to do more in order to get to a place where you developers can start relying on this feature. Let me show you a few capabilities of this specification. So I'm going to open another project. This time, again, let's start from the first demo. You can see that I still have the same shim object there. And what this demo does is I'm opening it in the browser, so I'm running on the localhost in this case, and I can select multiple files. This is something, if you think about it, like it's kind of obvious, but if you try today with any browser, like this is not allowed. And so as I get file list, I can say I want to select these 6 images, set open, and now nothing happened. There is no round trip to the server. The browser already knows all of the information about these files. You can get like the size, you can get the type, the last modification date. So this is the really first step in order to get to the file. And if we have a look to the code, the way it works is that you have the file selector, so you need to prompt to the user, a user select a file. And that you can do that using the open file dialog on the file selector. The next step is to retrieve those files. And you can do this calling what we call file list. And the file list will give you an array of file objects. And each file object has a name, has a date, and has a last modification date. And so now the client knows about the files, right? What's the next step? Well, actually, you can go inside the file. So let me open a new page. Let me run the demo first. So this time I want to read the content of the file. So I read a file, I get this dante.txt, I open it, and now the browser is getting inside the file, is getting all of the content, and it shows it. And then you see that you also have other events in the middle, like you know when, you know how long it's taking, you have like a progress event in the middle. So let's have a look to the code. You start with the open file dialog, exactly the same things that you saw earlier. And by the way, this is very critical, right? We don't want the website, a website to generically go into the file system and read files. So there's going to be a prompt. This is going to be a secure operation. So the file dialog returns a list of files. In this case, I'm getting just the first file. You have all of the basic information. And then what I do here is creating a file reader object. And the file reader allows me to get into the file and get the content. And it's, in particular, I'm using the readsText method here at the bottom. Once the file reader went through the files and read the text, it's going to return on load. And on load here is an event target result, which is actually the actual content of that specific file. You can do even more, actually, because this is text, so this is easy. Let's go to the blob. In this case, instead of using a text file, I'm going to use an image. So I'm going to select an image from the client. I'm going to take the koala. And now I can show the koala inside the browser. So this can get any complex as you want, right? It's not just for simple txt file. What I'm doing this time is using a different method. It's called createObjectURL. And basically, I'm taking the file, I'm taking the blob, and then I'm converting that blob into something that I can reuse in my page straight away. And I'm going to set that blob as the source content for my image. Let's run this demo again. Let's use the F12 tools. So I'm going to start debugging. I'm going to put a breakpoint here. I'm going to select the image. What you see here is that, let's see if I can zoom. You see what's the content of source? It's blob and then that GUID. So this is a new way called, it's a new syntax. It's similar to the data URI, but this is a new syntax that basically allows you to have blob of content, of files, of data, and use them to fill the content of your page. So what do you think about this? Do you like it? This is actually just one of the new labs that we just published. And by the way, this is available starting from a couple of days on htmlfilelabs.com, so you can go and try it. Again, it's a prototype. It's not ready for production yet, but I invite you to have a look and start building some experiment. The next one I'm very excited to talk about is the Media Capture API. This is a very, very nice feature. And what Media Capture API allows you to do is to connect to devices. You can connect to, you can get an image, you can get a video stream, or you can get an audio stream from the browser using web standards. It's pretty impressive if you think about HTML 5 years ago. So Media Capture API is a working draft specification in W3C. And the great thing about this is that it integrates with the rest of the platform. So it integrates with what we saw earlier with the file API. The best way to explain you what it does is just to show you a demo. So we announced the fact that we were going to have a HTML file labs for the Media Capture API. However, this is not available today yet. We will release the Media Capture API labs probably within the next week or so. But today I want to show you an early preview of that lab. So this preview exists only on my machine. It's never been tested before. Something might crash. Let's try. Yet another project. You notice here that I have a webcam with an integrated microphone. And I'm going to launch the microphone here. So if everything works, I'm going to capture my voice. I love HTML5. That's it. It worked. So you see that what I just did was capturing my voice. The browser now recorded this audio clip. It already knows the information about the audio clip. This is similar to what we saw earlier with the file API. And in particular, because this is a prototype, so this is not going to be the same in production, it saved that file into my file system. And
I love HTML5.
There it is. So what do you think? Isn't this cool? Notice here that we are saving a WAV file. This is just because it's a prototype. We will support like other codecs, other formats in later. And also, you will be able to access this file. Let's have a look to the code behind that little demo. You might be surprised because it's actually simpler than what you expect. First of all, I'm using the Media Capture API and in particular, I'm creating the audio context here. And the three contexts are image, audio, and video. Image, for example, is when you capture just like a static screenshot with static screen with the webcam. Then when you're ready, you can say media capture.capture audio. And you can set here a limit as well as you can set the duration of how long you want to record this audio clip for. If everything works fine, you're going to get an unsuccess, which is going to return like an array of file list. So similar to the file API, you have your file object, and then from there you can start manipulating the file object on the client. Keep in mind that you always need to open and close because you're basically getting access to the camera, and so you need to make sure that you dispose the resources correctly. Now, the next one is actually not supported, but it works. So I'm going to show you this. The Media Capture API is going to allow you access to the video stream, to a webcam stream as well. When we start building this prototype, the initial idea was to start with the audio only and then move on the video next. Actually, we found out that we could deliver both at the same time. And so we are going to ship to you in the next few weeks an implementation of this lab that supports both the audio and the video. And so I'm going to capture the camera here. I need to smile. Ciao, mama. Ciao. Okay, smile. Then if I go back to my folder, this time I have a video, right? Okay, you saw me. And the code is actually similar, if not the same. The only difference this time I'm using the capture video, and then I'm initializing a capture video and I'm calling the capture video. Everything else on this page exactly the same. So again, this is very powerful and it will be available soon as an HTML5 lab. What does it take to take it from where it is now to something that you can use in your in-production applications? Well, something that we learned as we look at this specification was that we actually needed more features. For example, we want to give you the ability of having a preview of the video. You saw that right now, the spec allows you to record the video and then replay it later. We wanted to have a way to preview the video. Excellent. And so one of the feedback we submitted to W3C is exactly this. Like, we find an API that allows you to preview the video. Let me switch quickly here. As I say, this is a lab, so something might have gone wrong, and it went, but it's great because just in time to show you the future. So I'm sorry, I apologize for this. I'm quickly rebooting. Another feedback we gave to W3C about the specification is the fact that your machine might have multiple input devices. You might have more than one microphone, more than one camera, and so there must be some way to access which device you want to use on your machine. And this is currently something not supported by the specification. We also want to make sure that everything that is happening here happens in a secure way that is compliant with your privacy and your security. And so we need to make sure that everything that we do here is safe. It would not be good if the browser could steal images of you while you're working or browsing, right? And so we will make sure that the implementation of the standard is secure. You can see all of the feedbacks that we submitted for the Media Capture API on actually the HTML5 Labs website, as well as W3C. So all of the conversation are live there. And other browsers, at the same time, they're working on this. So everyone is trying and experimenting and providing feedback. So I'm really optimistic that we will add this capability soon in the future. Now, while my machine is rebooting, another feature that is very tightly connected to this one is the speech API, right? Being able to say, machine, don't crash. That is something that you want to do from the web as well. And that's why the Microsoft speech team submitted a new specification, a new proposal to W3C about 4 weeks ago. And this proposal goes into the details of how the speech recognition should work into the browser and describe the APIs that you could use from your application to talk, to interact with your users. And for example, you can imagine this on a phone where you're saying search, like similar to what Windows Phone 7 does today. You can have your phone and you can say, find a way to avoid that your machine crash. And then this search goes back to the server and something, and you get the result. Or you might want to build a game, and you might want to interact with the game using the voice, right? So you can say, shoot, 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 or freeze, freeze. So you get the idea. Okay, we're almost done here. And I want to show you, I'd like to share with you just a screenshot of what some of the early designs of the speech API. There it is. So these are early mock-ups of what the speech API could look like. So again, it's both for recognition as well as synthesis. Another important specification that we recently submitted to W3C is the tracking protection. And tracking protection is a very important standard that define how browsers can support a safe browsing experience that respect your privacy. And we're going to talk about tracking protection in a meeting at the end of April with W3C and other members. Another standard that we supported, and this is actually a standard that Microsoft submitted with one of the first platform preview in i9, and now is supported as a standard, so it's already reached the recommendation level in i9 final version. It's called web performance. And what the web performance allows you to do is to capture the instrument, the performance of your application. You can profile the performance of your application. So today, we support part of this huge number of data. Something we're working on is allow you to record like user timing or resources timing, again, in a standard way. So you can use these APIs and they will work across any browser. Now, we talk about Microsoft's approach about standards today. And as I promised at the beginning, I wanted to share with you some of our vision for the future of HTML5. I'm calling it beyond HTML5. We can call it HTML6, which we can call it HTMLv Next. Actually, I don't think the name is important here. What is important is that there are already conversations going on at W3C about what the future of HTML5 will look like. And in particular, all of the members met at TPAC. It's an event. It's a formal event organized by W3C last November. Some of the things that Microsoft suggested for the future of HTML5 is, first of all, the introduction of an interoperability process. If we want HTML5 to succeed, we need to make sure that it's interoperable. Otherwise, if browsers keep doing different things, that's probably not something good for you developers. We also want to make sure that we focus on the things, we keep innovating, and we focus on features that you need versus more deep, academic topics. At the same time, anything that we do in the future needs to be backward compatible. We don't want to break the web, right? And lastly, we need to be more agile. Something that I think we learn working on HTML5 spec is that the HTML5 spec is a document of 1,000 pages. And as you can imagine, editing a document on 1,000 pages is complex. A different approach, the CSS3, group, working group use is to split the specification into different modules, such that each module follows a different path. And so you can be more agile in editing and implementing and everything. And I think this will apply well to the HTML world as well. In terms of futures, so what futures shall we expect next? Well, first of all, a better integration between the existing markups. Today we have HTML, then we have SVG, and then we have CSS. There is already a level of interoperability between those, but I think we can do more to merge and to integrate all of these markups together. On the video scenario, on the media scenario, one of the big lack of the specification is the ability of having DRM video. Obviously, this is a very complex conversation to have, and I think we will keep working on this, trying to find a solution for this scenario, as well as full screen APIs. Like today, there is a working group that is working on enabling full screen experiences. And this needs to be safe. If you remember, plugins had issues with the full screen when they first implemented it, because you don't want to trick the user. So we need to build it in a safe way. And now we're thinking, what does safe mean for a website? We also realized the fact that we need a better device support. So as HTML5 reaches more mobile devices, you need to get to the core of these devices. So you need the APIs to access the devices. And lastly, accessibility. We don't talk a lot about accessibility, but the reality is that there is a lot of work being done by the working groups to make sure that everything is accessible. We started this with the current specification. I9 provides already a great deal of accessibility with the new HTML5 features, and there is an opportunity to do even more here. Another thing that W3C recently created is what they call community groups. So in the past, only W3C members could work on the specification. Starting today, the community group allows you to submit your own idea to W3C. And this process is free. As long as you find four friends, actually four other people, and you create your own small group working on a specification or on a proposal, the proposal will be considered by the forum, the W3C forum, and eventually will lead into a specification of the future. And again, this process is free. You're welcome to join us in having those conversations. And you can see a link here if you're interested. Now, I'd like to close by sharing something that I think fascinates me. Today we talk about HTML5 in the context of browsers. The reality is that actually it's not more about just browsers. HTML5 now goes to television, to devices, to tablets. And in the future, we're going to see even a more larger ecosystem of devices that support HTML5. And because of this, it's very, very important to make sure that we have a solid, an interoperable implementation based on top of standards. My recommendation and my request to you is to use I9 and try to use those new web standards in your website. Try to see how you can create better experiences for your users. Go to the iTest Drive and explore the new capabilities of the platform previews. And also, go to the HTML5labs.com, download and try these labs, make up your demos, tell us your scenarios, tell us what you need that is not currently supported by the specification as they are. We want to have an open conversation. We want you to give feedbacks to us or to W3C, but we want to work together with you, with the community, on this. Make no mistake about one thing. The future of HTML5 is not in 20 years from now. The future of HTML5 is today, and is here, and it starts with you. Thank you.